This is HPR episode 2868 entitled, Custom Data with Persistent, and is part of the series, Haskell. It is hosted by Tuku Toroto, and is about 20 minutes long, and carries a clean flag. The summary is, Tutoto explains how to serialize custom data with persistent.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hello, this is Hack About the Radio, and you're listening to Tuturta. Today I'm talking about custom data with persistent. So, persistent is the Haskell library for connecting to the database that I have been using with the YesOd, that is a framework for building websites. So, quick recap how this thing works. There's a models. File in a config directory that is text, and this config file is used by the compiler. And in the config file, you list your data types or entities, and the compiler will generate you the code for that, and it also will generate code that will create the database for you. So when you first time you start your brand new YesOd application, it will connect to the database. Notice that it is empty, and it will generate the database schema for you. Later on, every time it connects, if you choose to use it, it will check the schema and the config file and perform the migration if there's changes there. Sometimes the migrations work, sometimes they don't, depending on what you do. If you add a non-mandatory column or field in your data, then persistent can do the upgrade, but if you add a mandatory value, then it cannot do the update and you have to do it by yourself, by hand. I wouldn't use this for the production data, but in the development it's really handy. So, persistent maps database and the Haskell types. So you get a records on the Haskell side, and then you get database tables on the database side. And columns of the database, of course, have different types, and so does the Haskell data, and the persistent does the mapping between these data two. There's a pre-existing mappings for common types like text and numbers of various kinds. But sometimes, quite often actually, you want to have a bit more granular approach on the Haskell side. You don't want to use those rather primitive data types, so you want to have something more specific. And then the persistent doesn't know how to handle those. So you need a mapping between the data that you wrote by yourself and the database. Good news is that the persistent can do this automatically. Basically any type of data. For example, in my game, I have a building type that is a enumeration. It has values like sensor station, research complex, farm, particle accelerator, neutron detector, so on. If I wanted to store this in the database, I could find on the Haskell side, derive persist field, quotation, building type, quotation. And during the compile time, the compiler will generate the mapping for me. I can use in that config/models file that defines my entities. I can now have, for example, a building entity, and there I can have a field type that has a value of building type. And in the Haskell side, this is just nothing strange. There's just I have a building type there that I can use as any regular data, because it is regular data. On the database side, there's a column in my building table that has a type of varchar, because the default implementation of the mapping is to turn enumerations into text. So if I have a farm type of, if I have a building that is type of farm, then its type is stored as a farm string in the database. Some people like to store these enumerations as a numbers, because it's more compact, it doesn't take so much of space. But I actually like storing them strings, because they are easier to handle when you are manually editing or reading the database. It's easier to remember that the farm as a string means a farm than remember that tree as a number means a farm. So this is how the persist can do the automatic deriving. It also works for the complex data. For example, I have a person name in my project that has three cases, and like there's a simple names. These are basically just a first name and maybe a cognomen. Like you can have a Pete, or you can have a Sam the fisherman. Then there's a regular names that have a first name, family name, maybe the cognomen. These are like John Smith and Susan Johnson the Brave. And then there's the regal names that are most complex. These have the first name, family name. They have a regnal number that is the running number that is used to distinguish between the rulers of the with same names, and then they have the cognomen. So you can have a George III, and or you can have William the Conqueror and such. I mean, of course, these would have family names too, but they are for some odd reason with the royalty. Well, depending on the culture, they go by their first name and the regnal number. Anyway, and this I actually can have a person name as a data type and store that into the database, and it gets converted into the varchar again. And there's a lot of information about which of these three types it actually is and what field is what, and there's quite a bit noise. I wouldn't want to deal with that manually, so I can just say to the persistent, do this for me, please. The downside is that manually editing that person name, manually editing a column that is type of person name is painful, and I usually don't do that. For new types, automatic deriving doesn't work that well, because there's this extra noise and extra information, and it's stored as a text. So I think that's a bit extra. New type is that method of the way of defining a new type that behaves like some existing type, but is distinct of that. For example, in my game, I have a stardate that denotes point in time, stardate. And that is internally represented as an int. So I'm defining it as a new type, stardate equals stardate, open curly bracket, unstardate, double colon, int, close curly bracket. So now I have a stardate that is actually an int. I can I can perform calculations with it. I can add two start dates together. I can compare two start dates. I can see if they are equal or if one is big later in time than another one, and so on. If I were to store this into the database using the automatic deriving, for example, today's start date would be stored into the database as a text, start date, open curly bracket, unstart date equals 20196, close curly bracket. And that's a 6th month of 2019. And because it's a text in the database, it's hard to compare them in the SQL. You cannot order them, and you cannot pick all the dates with a given range and such things. You would have to do all that thing in the code. So I would want to store this as a number. So in the database it will be a number, so I can do all the database operations that can be done to the numbers. But on the Haskell side it would still be a star date, because I don't want to mix the star dates with the shoe sizes, for example. So how this is done? There's a two type classes that I have to make instance of. I know that I still haven't made an episode about type classes, but I'll try to make that soon. But type classes basically mean that you have a common interface that is shared between different data. So in this case, there's a two type classes. There's a persist field, and then there's the persist field SQL. So the first one is used to map between the Haskell side and the database side, and the second one is used to tell what is actually the type on the database side. So the persist field, I have these definitions written down into the show notes if you want to check them, and I try to skip a bit of the extra noise here, so it is followable if you are just listening. So the persist field, I basically have to just write the instance persist field start date where, and then the definitions. I have two functions to persist value that takes a start date and returns a persist value, so it converts to the persist value. And here I just say that to persist value start date n equals persist int 64 dollar form integral n. So I take my start date apart so that I have access to that internal integer, and I construct a persist int 64 with this value. Now I have mapped my start date into the persist value. Then there's another function from persist value that takes persist value and possibly returns a start date. Possibly because there's multiple persist values, like there's numbers, there's text, and so on. So we have to take into account that maybe somebody made somewhere a mistake and we are trying to deserialize text into the start date. But first the happy case from persist value, persist in 64 n equals write dollar start date dollar form integral n. So we are taking that persist in 64 apart so that we get access to the number inside of it. We call the from integral into that so that we can make sure that it's a correct integer type, because there's int, there's integer, and so on. We construct a start date with that value, and then we construct write with that constructed start date value. So we are returning write start date and the value. This is the happy case. Then we have an unhappy case where we just write from persist value underscore This means that anything that hasn't been matched so far, so basically anything else that isn't persist in 64. So from persist value underscore equals left quotation failed to deserialize quotation mark. This means that if for some odd reason somebody would try to deserialize text into the star date, this shouldn't happen, but because we are dealing with the Haskell, we have to take into account cases that shouldn't happen, because they still might happen. So if somebody would try to deserialize text into the star date, they would get a left failed to deserialize, so they would get an error case. So this takes care of nothing between Haskell and the database. The second type class that we need to implement or have the instance of is the persist field SQL. That this is short one. It just says instance persist field SQL star date where SQL type underscore equals SQL int 64. This tells that when a persistent is creating the database and it encounters a table definition where it says where the type of column is star date, it by this it understands that it needs to create a column of SQL int 64. So now when we use if we now use the star date in our table definitions, we are not getting a varchars anymore, but we are getting a integers, which is more compact and allows us to treat it as a number in the database and allows us to do whatever you can do with the numbers of the SQL database. So this is how you do the mapping. There's one more trick that is tangentially related to here called is string type class. So for example, in my code there I have a planet name new type that is used to store, surprise surprise, planet names, because I don't want to mix the planet names with the star names, with the ruler names, or with the ship names, for example. So I have planet name, and normally if I'm constructing these planet names on the Haskell side manually, I would have to say that my planet equals planet name quotation mark Earth quotation mark. So now my planet name is Earth. But it would be really nice to just write Earth and have the compiler to deduce the correct type, because if a couple lines after that I'm using it as a planet name, the compiler should be able to do that, because it knows that here's some sort of text and a couple lines afterwards it's used as a planet name, so it has to be a planet name. And this, there's a way of doing this. It requires a language extension called overloaded strings. You can enable this in compile options when you're invoking the compiler. Depending on your build system, you can configure them, or you can just have a language pragma in your source file that is just open curly bracket dash whatever that is, the thing that it looks like a fence, language overloaded strings, again the fence thingy, dash close curly bracket. So this pragma means that now in this source file overloaded strings is turned on. And then of course you have to, well of course, but you know, but then you still need a is string instance for your data type. So in our planet name it would be just instance is string planet name where from string equals planet name dot from string. That's it, nothing more. What this means is that whenever the compiler needs to convert from some text into the planet name, it knows that it can use the from string combined with the planet name. So planet name value constructors just takes a string value. And this allows us to use the planet name without specifying that it is planet name. The compiler will still type check. It won't allow you to mix things that aren't the same things, but you don't have to keep specifying that this string is a planet name. As long as you consistently use it as a planet name, everything works out. It's not a big deal, but I think it makes writing programs a bit nicer. And the advantage is that you will never mix planet with a star name, or building type with a shoe type, or hat size with a shoe size. Okay, that's today's episode. Thanks for listening. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me by email or at the Fediverse, where I'm tuturto@mastodon.social. Thanks for listening. Ad Astra.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.